last week, we tried to show was, and I'm repeating sources from last week at the beginning of on page one. So we showed the chain that led to Reb Chaim Volozhin's Nefesh HaChaim. There's a pasuk. The pasuk is interpreted by the Rush. The Rush says that there is a difference between L'shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu and L'shem HaTorah. And then Relam summarizes Rabbi Chaim Volozhin's position as the study of Torah for its own sake. I apologize for the lacking F in 4. Was of the 18th century Rabbi Chaim Volozhin's translation of the Shema. I get Relam's thing, right? L'shem HaTorah, for the sake of the Torah. Quite literally, the intellectual comprehension of Torah is the purpose of its study. There is no place for inspiring religious emotion. The purpose is purely cognitive, the increase in knowledge and understanding. Okay, the problem was we showed last week that even after Reb Chaim Volozhin's Nefesh HaChaim, even people who claim to be presenting his position, nonetheless seem to have some element of religion and emotion in it. We talked about the what's blanking on the name, the Telzer, Shuri Das, who talks about the Kesher to Kodesh Baruch Hu, right, which I was a little sarcastic and said, right, that's obviously very different than Vekus, right, and that both the Egle Tal, who at least is Hasidic, and the Shuri Das, who is not, talk about Ahava Satura, and so that didn't seem to match up with Rabbi Lam's summary of the Nefesh HaChaim. And I argued that the way in which Rabbi Lam appears to present that summary is not actually humanly sustainable, and that's why everyone goes away from it. But what I want to show this week is that perhaps that understanding of Nefesh HaChaim is overdone as is, and actually the Shiur HaDas may have a more accurate portrayal of Nefesh HaChaim in important ways, and I want to show one particular reason that that may seem astonishing to frankly, those of us in modern Orthodoxy coming out of the tradition of Yeshiva University, perhaps, and very specifically coming from Halachic Man. Okay, so let's read sections of Nefesh HaChaim. All right, so Nefesh HaChaim says that the clear truth is that Lishma doesn't mean Dveikus as most of the world now thinks, and he gives the argument that Nefesh HaChaim, that Lishma can't really mean Dveikus because there are times when you learn Torah that you could not possibly really be in Dveikus, because thinking about the things of Torah will distract you from Dveikus. When you're thinking yourself into the minds of liars in court, you can't actually be connected to God unless you have a very expansive conception of what Selam Elokim means. Okay. Just thinking that little theological stuff.
Okay. I really didn't like that.
All right. But then I want to give you Nefesh HaChaim 4.3, says the following, right? Well, emet ki inyan lishma perish l'shem haTorah. And he explains it like the Rush. And then he goes on to say, machmat ahavata atzma mamash. Hayinu losif balekechu pilpul. So when the Nefesh HaChaim is explaining that Rush, who says that learning Torah lishma means losif lekechu pilpul, we didn't know what lekach meant, but to add, or whether to add meant to add it creatively or to add to your understanding of it, but there's some kind of intellectual accomplishment coming out of it. He explains that as ahavata atzma mamash. So he uses the word love. Right. So learning Torah lishma now means for love of Torah. So now the question is, right, are there kinds of love that you engage in that can be described as no place for inspiring religious emotion, the purpose is purely cognitive? Right, that, I think, is an interesting question. Okay, so let's turn the page. What I want to do now is I'm going to read a section of Ish Halakha, which I think is probably the most influential, at least in modern Orthodoxy, certainly for me. Like, this is the passage that shaped for many years my image of what Torah Lishma meant and what Nefesh HaChaim meant and what it meant to be a Yeshiva boy. All sorts of things just come from this passage in Ish Halakha. This passage, however, is not a citation from Nefesh HaChaim, it's a citation from Ruach HaChaim, which is Ruach HaChaim Volozhin's commentary to Pirkei Avot. This is on the sixth parak, so we can quibble about whether it's his commentary to Pirkei Avot or the commentary to the thing appended to Pirkei Avot. So here is how The Rav wrote it. Right, the Rav wrote it in Hebrew. Professor Kaplan has a has a justly famous translation, which I am altering slightly here. So you can you could take out the original if you want, or you or look it up afterwards and see whether my alterations change the point I'm trying to make. So, here's, right, so the Rav says in Yan Halishma. Right, the Rav, this is the Rav's quotation. Right, the Rav's quoting from Nefesh HaChaim, and you'll see that it has many of the features of Nefesh HaChaim. Right, so the notion of Torah Lishma refers to L'shem Ahavata Torah. So in Ruach Chaim, it's up front. Right, the word love is there in line one. Doesn't mean L'shem HaTorah. It means L'shem Ahavata Torah. Okay, so now we figure out, like, so what does that mean for love of Torah? L'gav L'amud Al Shorasha, right, to exert oneself to determine its root principle. Now we're going to contrast Ahavata Torah with Dveikus. If you think that lishma means dveikus as opposed to love of Torah, and therefore imkain lidato b'dimyono, and according to your right to your opinion and imagination, yachshov, you'll think sheyasok b'shirot v'tushbachot ubifrat b'sefer te'ilim minim zvarot Yisrael ha'meorim ahavat Hashem v'kirvato v'zed daylo ova yichya chayim arubim. So if the goal is love, and the goal is dveikus, so we are learning the wrong kind of Torah. Instead of learning the Torah, which distracts us by making us think about the mind of frauds, we should be singing very pleasant songs, which inspire us. Inspiring religious emotion. Inspiring religious emotion, the way to get there is to learn Tehillah. Well, somebody. I know. Let's wait till he gets there. Let's not prejudge. Okay. This is love of Torah in Rav Soloveitchik's citation of Rav Chaim. All right. So let's not reach anybody before we get there. Right. So he says, Avas HaTorah is different than Dveikus, because if a person thinks that Lishma means Dveikus, he should be just engaged with Tehillim, and that way v'zedaylo v'yichya chayim revim, he'll live a sweet life. Avalo kainu. This is, right, this would be an error. How do I know this is an error? Not just this is an error about Lishma. This is an error about what the apex of religious life is. Right, you would think if the goal of Talmud Torah is Dveikus, and Talmud Torah is the apex of religious life, so then religious life generally should be aimed at Dveikus. But, Kelo Masina B'Midrash, Shed David B'Kesh, Shehosek B'Shirav V'Zimirav, Right, we find a medrash in which David asks God, let people who engage with Tehillim be the same as people engaged in Nega'im and Oholot. Okay, now why pick Nega'im and Oholot specifically? I guess the simplest explanation is Nega'im and Oholot are about as far away as you can get from pleasant stuff. Right? Lesions and death. Right, that's what we're talking about. Right, so you want to talk about getting away from Dveikus, so spending your time thinking about lesions and death is probably not the best way to have religiously inspiring thoughts, although they may inspire you to have inspiring religious thoughts.
Isn't it also because they seem more like in the hook category, like they're much harder to understand?
So interesting question, whether they're harder to understand. I don't know. That prejudges what things are hard to understand. I don't know that Nagami no Olot are particularly hard to understand. I think he would say Parah, wouldn't he? He would probably say Parah, right, if he had to pick a paradigmatic hook. So I'm not sure that's it. And Olo still has implications of the Masa, so you can't claim that they're right, that they're, it's because they're not practiced. And certainly in the time of the Medrash, which puts in the mouth of David HaMelech, Nagami no Olot are perfectly the Masa. So I think, but I think they're probably just really upsetting things. So David HaMelech asks the reward for Oseik B'Shirav Zmirav to be considered the equivalent of Oseik B'Negayim V'Olot, Areshin Agayim V'Olot Yukarim Yoter. So obviously, right, the premise that even David HaMelech shares is that before he asks for special treatment, it is better to learn Negayim V'Olot than it is to engage with Tehillim. He's just asking for special treatment. Leaving aside the question of whether God can arbitrarily change the values of certain actions, right? Sophia would be into that, right? Let's make people prefer reading inspiring poetry to learning about Nagaminolo, so let's just say it's the same. Sorry, I'm just teasing her. after sharing today, we're debating with them whether Poskim should consider when poskening that if people are violating something, so it's better to poskin as the Rabbanan. Because that way in Shemayim, God only scores against them that they're violating the Rabbanan instead of the Oraisas.
Not to, you know, push Sophia's buttons even more, but...
I wish to say, by the way, President, it should be clear that we are having a person named Sophia in the shir while we are having this discussion.
But, yeah, no, I guess, you know, about Talmud Torah, but, like, you know, we could make it a kimta, say, you know, for women, it's better to be...
It applies to both men and without the chiyuv, right? Whether it's just the chiyuv or not. That makes it better. Oh my goodness, possibly. Sorry. Wow. Been a long day. Okay. David HaMelech asked this question, which he had no idea would have these dangerous implications many years later for people in Shir. And he says, can we treat this the equivalent? Right? And guess what? We don't even find that God said yes. Maybe David HaMelech asked, and God said no. That doesn't make any sense. Obviously, the Nagamin Olot are better than Tehillim. Right, in the Nefesh HaChaim, right, people give skeptical looks when he says this, and so he puts a little footnote giving other answers, giving other cases of Midrash where people ask God for things and don't get them. Yes, Rabbi Bilski.
Does the Midrash have an end, or does it just say, well, you ask for this, and it doesn't say,
well, I would look at page 3, but I'm not to it yet. But the answer is that no, the measure just ends after David's question. Okay, right. Let's say in Nefesh HaChaim there's a footnote which apparently was put in after the first edition, giving other right because apparently people said what really people usually when people ask things for God it makes it into Medrash unless you say otherwise they get them, right? So he puts in examples where he things prove that's not always the case. Okay. So the essence of learning is not to engage, and I'm always puzzled by what the word rak was doing there. Not to engage only in dvikus. I thought it wasn't to engage in dvikus at all. But the essence, right, is not to engage only in dvikus. I think that Professor Kaplan translated it simply, right? I left that translation here, which I think sort of obscured the problem. Yes?
This might get into more of a core debate, but I find it hard to read Rav Chaim without like giving it through a Kabbalistic lens of like different definitions of these words and like the spheres especially. Like, that seems to be what's echoing half of Rav Chaim, so I'm confused how we're reading it without that perspective. That's what Dvekut is here.
Right, but we're not going for Dvekut here.
Yeah.
But not only for Dvekut. Okay.
No, because Dvekut has two parts of each Chachma and Vina in the spheres. And each of those parts characterize themselves in different ways.
Interesting. I don't know. But I wouldn't be competent to do it in those terms, so I'm going to go ahead as I am. And then we can find it afterwards if what I'm saying is complete nonsense. That's fine. Yes, Gershon.
I think you said maybe
merely for Dvekus. Interesting translation. Okay, let's hold that as well. Natan, what did you want to say?
I mean, if you're accepting his translation, I think that's fine. I mean, I don't see the contradiction. Like, what's the tension? He's saying that it's lishma does not mean dvekut, and we already said last year how lishma wasn't exhaustive.
Okay, so we get right. So you can right. Dvekut is a good thing if you get it, but you have to realize you have to sacrifice it when other things when it gets in the way of lishma.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Right. So it's not rekim lasigal yada hatorav hamitzvos v'hadinim. Rather, you're supposed to be masig on it, however you want to translate masig in this way, achieve knowledge of, comprehend, Torah, mitzvah, and dinim, and to know everything, al buryo kola uprkola uprateha. So it sounds like we're setting up a pretty clear opposition between poetry and law. Right, poetry is inspirational, law is cognitive, right, and that's what we're focused on the legal. So when we speak about them, they should just be for the sake of the things themselves. That's what generates the whole slogan. Right, now we introduce the rush. There it is again. K'moshet ishtabshu b'zeh harbeis. Many people have erred and think that the whole purpose is dveikus. Right, and then he gives you the example of having to engage in nezikin, right, things that are gashmius at their essence. Now he goes on to say, shelo yichaven be'et halimud b'inyan yirat Hashem, even though you are not intending anything religious, right, you have no religious consciousness while you are engaged in the learning. Mikol makom kol halimud hu l'shem yichud HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I hear we're going to get into the kind of material that Gabe is quoting about, right? So it shouldn't be L'Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it shouldn't, probably, presumably, your intent should not be L'Shem Yichud HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but don't worry about it. As long as you do L'Shem HaTorah, it will end up being L'Shem Yichud HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'kashim yaged asma bidvar halacha b'pashtus, b'vaday hashchina shura elav bish'as limado mamish, k'mamar chazal ein lo l'Kadosh Baruch Hu be'alamo eladal l'mod shalacha bilvad. So when you want to understand a law simply and clearly, then even though you don't intend dveikus, nonetheless the Shekhinah comes down and rests upon you. And that's why we say that God has nothing in his world except for the four amot of halacha. So it seems emerging from here that you have a contrast between poetry and law. Talmud Torah Lishma is about learning law for its own sake. And it happens when you learn law for its own sake, you attain a different kind of religious communion and a different kind of religious unification. So actually, the Shirei Hadas has a pretty interesting grasp on it, right? Because there is another kind of religious communion going on, which is opposed to Dveikus, so call it Kesher, right? The Shekhinah rests upon you, and there's a claim that certain kinds of religious ends are achieved regardless of your intent. But the learning is just understanding halacha. Yes, sir.
What do you make of the use of that in the Lakarosh Baruch Hu Bolamo Ella Arbamo Chalacha Bilbad? It feels like it was talking about praxis and how we're turning it.
Yeah, so that's right. So that is the big move of Ishalacha all the way through, is that we convert halacha, right? As I told you, right? You know, my ambition was to write Ishalacha Lamaaseh because it's a completely different person than Ishalacha. Ishalacha just studies the halacha. That's what he does, right? The same way that he converts David having his hands, mixed in Dam Nida into David studying Masechet Nida. Right? That's the move that Ishalacha pulls all the way through. Yes?
With the stress here on Bilvad at the end, it sounds like not only is he saying that according to this Midrash, David HaMelech's request about the poetry was refused, but it sounds like a total delegitimization of that type of religious experience at all. Like, it's not a religious experience. You're not connecting to Hashem because Hashem is bilvad.
At least not in this world, right? Maybe you can have some kind of transcendent experience with poetry. But if you want to have an experience of God in this world, poetry is not going to get you there. Right? That might very well be true. That might very well be true. Okay. What we're missing, though, is, right, this will get back to Tag's point, is where is the love? Right, what does it mean for the love of Torah? You're learning stuff. And you're learning stuff, and it ends up, you have religious experience. So what does love of Torah mean? Yes, sir.
My problem was his assumption about the connection between Likud and, exclusively Shira B'tish Pachot was mistaken. Like to cleave unto God, to love somebody else is not just to enjoy the nice bits of that, the sweet bits of that. There's also the struggling to understand what it is that how they experience the world or the things that they want, and those can be very complicated and sometimes they can be unpleasant.
Aha, that's very interesting. Yeah, that so if you think that, so you think that dveikus, right? In the sense of if human beings could be redavak b'ishto, has to mean something more than just the cheeriest elements of the relationship. And therefore, right, we should know the things. An interesting claim, right, that it's just a false notion of dveikus. And interesting to know whether that would be the Hasidic response. I don't know.
I mean, that's the way that I've very little experience with the Tanya, but from the very little bits that I've read, that's how he seems to understand what Talmud Torah is, that when you grasp a concept in halacha, you're like grasping the mind of God, so to speak, in that area, and so then your mind and God's will literally inhabit the same mental space, and so that's the dvekut, that's the cleaving unto God, that's the connection.
So it's interesting why Reb Chaim V'Lezhin doesn't go there, right? Because that seems like a pretty straightforward way. You're just knowing the mind of God, right? And that's trouble with emotions. He says love, hard to believe. Okay, all right, but I think that's fair. It's like, why does he think of dvekus as oppositional to intense engagement with halakha? And he seems to think that there is a conflict. I gave the thing last year about why do we, the Rashi's understanding that Avram leaves dvekus to engage in milus chasadim. Right? Also, we could ask the same question, why is that leaving dvekus? So maybe it's too narrow a notion of dvekus also, or maybe we have too expansive a notion of dvekus. There are other valuable things, but they're not dvekus. Okay, here's the original midrash, which I hope I have cut out the appropriate parts because it's difficult to figure out the flow. That's what David says in Tehillim. What does that mean? She either ya'asu or ye'asu l'doros, v'yuchaku l'doros. So I don't know what either of those verbs mean in this context. Right, but what David HaMelech is asking something, right? Yehi Ratzon, let them be, about his words, presumably his words in Tehillim, or on page 3, David, top of page 3. Okay, we're on the top of page 3. So David HaMelech asks these things, right? That his words should be l'doros, and then he says, "V'al yehu korin behem kekorin b'sifrei meiras." People should not read Tehillim the way they read the Sifrei Meiras. Ella, rather, you korin behem, v'hogin behem, v'notlim alehim schar, kinageim v'oholot. All right, so that's David Melech's thing, is I don't... There are two components. I want people not to do what they do with Sifrei Meiras. Rather, I want them to do something else, and I want them to receive reward, like negam and oholos. So the negam and oholos could relate only to the reward, or it could be that there's a contrast between what one does with Sifrei Meiras and what one does with Negaim and Aholot, and one gets reward for the thing that one does with Negaim and Aholot, as opposed to the thing that one does with Tehillim.
What's Sifrei Meiras?
Good! Excellent question. What's Sifrei Meiras? So there are, I think, 5 places in rabbinic literature where Sifrei Meiras shows up in one version or another of a text. But often there are other versions. Sometimes the other versions say Sifrei Homeras. Sometimes the other versions say Sifrei Meiram. The places are contradictory. Some places they're positive evaluations. Sometimes they're negative evaluations. This becomes an academic dispute. Gershon can recall more correctly than I all the people on each side of it, as to whether the rabbis heard of Homer or not. So a separate share of mine is trying to figure out, like, trying to address the question of whether the rabbis knew Homer or not. What I gave on Shavuos night, I think right here, you can tease my eventual hopeful Lehrhaus article on this, although I haven't started writing it. That the academic debate where, say, Professor Lieberman says obviously the rabbis knew of Homer, and I think it's Gretz who says obviously the rabbis never heard of Homer, which is parallel to disputes in other areas. I don't really understand the conversation because they seem to assume that all the places are either all of these places are referenced to Homer or none of them are, and that the debate is about what Chazal knew and not about what the scribe who wrote this particular manuscript knew. Because it's entirely possible that Chazal never heard of anybody named Homer, but that a scribe saw Sifrei Meiras and it's talking about something parallel to Hillim, so he wrote Homeras. Right, for example. So I don't really understand the nature of the conversation. It would have to be really built into the text to say whether Chazal knew it was Homer or not. And the manuscript evidence goes both ways. The evidence, I don't think it's possible for all of them to refer to Homer because of the completely opposite evaluations. Well, of course we could say, of course Chazal heard of Homer, and some of them thought that you should burn it, and some of them thought it was really wonderful. So you can do whatever you want. However, here it seems to be talking about poetry. So here it is plausible that it's right, that it's about Homer, and they understood what Homer was. By the way, it's also possible that they said Homer, but that they didn't know who Homer was. In the Shir on Shavuos, I pointed out that we know what Homer is. Homer is elderly and blind, but apparently in evil Islam, Homer is young, cheerful, and fat, and perfectly sighted. So what their image of Homer was, and Homer had other works which we don't have. So maybe it's Homer, but they're not thinking of Homer, the author of the Iliad and the Odyssey. They're thinking of Homer, the author of some lost poem or novel that we don't have. Who knows? But let's assume it's Homer, right? With all those difficulties. So what might it mean that David HaMelech is saying, I don't want people to treat this like Homer? Well, first, like who treats Homer? Right? And why would this be meaningful in a Jewish context? Right? David HaMelech coming up to God and saying, please don't make Tehillim like Homer. Homer is pretty successful. Right? That's a pretty, assuming we're talking a time when Homer, right? When Homer is, it's like somebody who writes a modern play going up to God and saying, I don't want to be Shakespeare. Right? I don't know what the equivalent would be, right? I want to be somebody writing legal textbooks. That would be an odd thing to request. Jacob, do you want to say something?
Oh, the other problem would be wanting to be an indie hipster artist that nobody hears
of. Okay. Okay, so I gave a selection from a dialogue of Plato called The Ion, in which Socrates Gadarko takes this poor figure Ion apart. Ion walks in really happy. He is a rhapsode. He gives terrific performances about Homer. And he also gives lectures about Homer, which is not as good for my point. And Socrates essentially argues that a couple of things. One is, if you're lecturing about Homer, you're lecturing about one of two things. Either you're lecturing about the art of poetry, and you're excellent at the art of poetry, so you should really be able to lecture about all poetry just as well, because you obviously understand what is good and bad about, right? This is Socrates, right? Obviously understand, in order to judge Homer or to speak about Homer, you must know everything about poetry, and then why should it matter which poet you're talking about? Or alternatively, you're talking about the subject matter of Homer. Well, Homer talks about war, so you must be a great general. Why is it they're delivering lectures about poetry when you could be a great general? Otherwise, how can you evaluate or speak about the strategy in Homer? Anyway, you can decide whether you like Socrates' arguments or not. The point of Socrates at the end of it, and this is central to the Platonic project of displacing poetry with philosophy, is that poets are mindless. They are simply the result of the overflow of divine inspiration, and rhapsodes, performers of poetry, are just mad. It's a divine madness, but as soon as the divine madness leaves them, they have absolutely, there's no content to them whatsoever. And right, but that, right, that we can appreciate them or their performances without in any way thinking that they have, that their voices should be taken into account at all. Right, because they're just dumb people who occasionally get possessed by God. Right, you want to read it as a interpretation of Bilam and Parshas Balak, you can go ahead. Right, which is it's certainly a way to frame it. Okay, so now what if what David HaMelech is talking about is the relationship to a text as something that you just read in transport, but that you don't study. Right, the goal of the text is to provide an experience which doesn't change you and doesn't teach you anything. So I thought that if we think that this is Homer, that we can understand what David is asking, and that it might be framed in the way Reb Chaim V'lezhin specifically says it, is David HaMelech asks for people to be osek b'Tehillim. The way people are osake b'negamin olos. So maybe that's really what Reb Chaim V'lezhin wants to convey as well. That David wants Tehillim to be an object of study, not an object of performance. And he takes it as a given that you get more reward for study than for performance. That just points up that the way that the selection in Ish Halacha does it, the emphasis is on content, right? What is it we're studying? Right? It's Ish Halacha, because Ish Halacha studies law as opposed to the person who says to Tehillim, who is just engaged in tashi-fili religious inspiration. And there is an obvious hole, which is philosophy. What is philosophy? Is it like Tehillim? Or is it like Negamim Noholos? It's analytic. Its subject matter is God, so it can certainly get to Dveikus. So there's a hole in Ish HaLacha, right, in the sect of Ish HaLacha, right? Because he limits the world. He limits the world to poetry and law. But I guess, you know, there should be some way to say there's more philosophy in the world, right, than you dreamt of Horatius or something like that. Right? There should be a way to spin the quote so that you can point up the point up the hole. So that's, I think, an interesting interesting question. Now, that hole, I think, is generally central to Ish HaLacha. Right, the way I usually introduce Shirim about Ish HaLacha is with a quote that I always attribute to Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, although it apparently cannot be found in any of his writings. So it could be I made it up. But I remember it from Rabbi Sacks, which is that the Ish HaLacha would not have read the book, let alone written it. Right, because Ish HaLacha has no interest in philosophy. So why would he write? It's not law, right? Ish HaLacha is not law. And in terms of understanding, right, who Rav Soloveitchik is, so it's important to understand that Rav Soloveitchik is not the Ish HaLacha, he's the author of Ish HaLacha. And the author of Ish HaLacha has no interest in being the Ish HaLacha. He just likes studying him. Okay, so with that, I want to take a look at what Nefesh HaChaim actually says in its presentation of Torah Lishma, and then I want to take a look at the quote from Ruach Chaim in Ish HaLacha and see what can we get from Nefesh HaChaim that we wouldn't have gotten from the quote in Ish HaLacha, and then is there anything else in Ruach Chaim that isn't in Nefesh HaChaim either? That will help us understand what's really meant by Rav Chaim's quote, and help us understand what he really meant by Torah Lishma. So here a fuller version of Nefesh HaChaim, Shara Dalet, Perek Bet. Inyan Esek Torah Lishma, right? So we said already it's clear that the truth is obvious. I'm sorry there isn't full translations for this. I don't think, right? It's in subtran, yeah. Right, that the, we're on the top of page 4. Right, so he begins with the citation that we began all the way down to the footnote, which I mentioned, right? So if you look for the parentheses around line 10, that's where he puts in the Gemara, the two Gemaras that he thinks show that sometimes God turns down requests. Now he adds it. He says, V'gam, ki hedai l'inyan hadveikus b'mesechet achat o perek o mishneh echad sheyasok ba kol yamav bidveikus. If the goal was dveikus, so then what you need is a mantra. You shouldn't be constantly learning new things. You should be finding the thing that inspires connection of God to you, whatever it may be. Right, whether it's Hilchos Brachos, or Negaim, whatever, right, whatever it is that gives you the connection to God, you want to learn that over and over again. But that's not what we say. But rather it's Lo Chen Matzina B'Chazal. We don't find the Chazal. Rather Chazal say Shamru Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Shalinech Mikra Mishnah, and here we have our first dangerous note, Halachot V'Agadot. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai studied lots of things, not all of them law. Because we include Agadot in there. V'hainu, ki mehalotu alibo tamid ki Eden, right, the version of Adayin, lo yitza yidei chovat esek hator lishma b'mash lamad ad ata. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai sat back and said, I learned a lot. That does not fulfill my obligation of Torah lishma. Such an interesting thing. It doesn't fulfill my obligation of Torah lishma. Talmud Torah, you can be yotzei just by saying Kriyat Shema over and over again. Kriyat Shema is a great way to achieve dveikus because you're mekabel ol malchus shemayim. So maybe we should just fulfill our mitzvah of Talmud Torah by not, right, what we tell Amei Haaretz, or we don't tell Amei Haaretz, right, Machlokas, is that you fulfill your mitzvah of Talmud Torah by reciting Kriyat Shema evening and morning. But that's the only difference between the Amei Haaretz and Talmud Chacham is that the Amei Haaretz might think that you fulfill your Talmud Torah by saying Kriyat Shema once in the evening and once in the day, and the Talmud Chacham will know that you fulfill your mitzvah of Talmud Torah by constantly reciting Kriyat Shema, day and night. But the whole goal is, if you understand Kriya Shema, you're great. But there's a new thing called the Chiyuv Torah Lishma. And the Chiyuv Torah Lishma is not satisfied by learning, by saying Kriya Shema over and over again. It's not even satisfied just by learning Halachot. It includes Agadot. Lizot, Haya Shoked Kol Yamav, L'Hosif Lekach Tamid, Miyom Liyom Misha'ad L'Sha'ah. So remember, right, that the Rush defined Talmud Torah Lishma as being Mosif Lekach. So now the Reb Chaim Volozhin says that Torah Lishma is constantly seeking to be Mosif Lekach, which means learning new things. Uvimishle Rabbah. So now he quotes a Medrash, which is a pretty scary Medrash, right? Where he come and say, look how difficult the Yom HaDin is going to be. Because people come and they've learned Chumash. And God says, yeah, why not Mishnah? And people come and they learn one Masechta of Mishnah, and God says, what about the next Masechta? And if they've completed Shas Mishnayos, God comes and says, what about Shas? What about Shas Gemara? Right? Even if you learn three Siddurim, God says, I'm sorry, there are six. and we keep on upping the scale. Right? Right? God, right? And God even asks about things like Haggadah. And at the very end, Bami Shiesh Biado Talmud, somebody comes who has, in fact, finished Shas. HaKadosh Baruch Amir Lo, Bini, Hoyel V'Nesachta B'Talmud, Tzipisa B'Mirkava. You know, can you tell me exactly the dimensions of my Kisei HaKavod? Whoops, sorry. Left door. In case you want to know which door is which, when the angel asks you, it's the right door is the good one, right? He says, right, after the sudden switch into the, right, the Kisei HaKavod and the Chashmal, he goes back and he says, this is obviously the case, because there are lots of things in Shas that aren't about Dveikus again, right? So there's a move up from Halacha, and but then we go back into and saying, learning Halacha doesn't get you where you need to go. Okay, then we have Shaar Gimel, the next Shaar, this is page 5, where he begins by quoting the Rush. He explains the difference between L'Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu and L'Shem Torah. And then let's pick it up where he says, where he's explaining the Rush. He says, the Kavanato Zel Mivu'ar, right? Around halfway down in the Nefesh HaChaim on page 5. So the Rush's intention is clear. Hainu, ki asiyat mitzvah, when you're doing mitzvahs, Vaday should tzricha liot mitzvah and amuchar bidveikus uv machshava tahora shepetoros kefi sichlo v'asagaso kishay kaleis ila ligrom tikunei olamot v'kolchod esterim elyonim zehu l'shem po'alon. Mitzvahs are supposed to be done in dveikus and with pure thoughts. Right? Every mitzvah is supposed to be done in that notion of dveikus. Even though you're yotze if you just do the action, or at most you do the action with kavana l'shem mitzvah, but certainly the best mitzvahs are always done with ultimate dveikus. Okay? But, so that's really great. Aval, he says, Al hanagata dam bish'at esek haTorah. Now we're about four, five lines below that, right? About the behavior of a person, bish'at esek haTorah, b'dinei ha-mitzvot v'hilchoteihen. Right, when he's talking about the laws of the mitzvot, right? So we're back to law. Amar v'daber behen, Rotzilomar hadibur binyanei ha-mitzvot v'hilchoteihen yeh lishman perish l'shem ha-divrei Torah haynu leidav l'havin l'osif lekach u'pilpul. Okay, so as opposed to the maaseh ha-mitzvot, Talmud Torah about the mitzvot has to be, right, it's not about dveikus, it's about the things themselves. But he hasn't told us like what that means for the things themselves. He ends up quoting Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai again. And that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So we're a little puzzled because there are little breadcrumbs saying that it's not all about halacha. And yet, whenever he talks about what you're right, talks about it, he goes back to halacha. Whenever he tries to explain Lishma, he goes back to halacha. So how do we square, like, what is Rechaim Volozhin really about? So I think the answer is going to be in on page 6. So usually I do this more dramatically. So I'll just tell you, right, you can have fun. Right, page 6 is the quote from Ish Halacha with all the places where the Rav went dot, dot, dot filled in. And that, you know, when I do it visually, you can see like the, you know, the Rav like quotes like 20 lines, but it's really two pages. And the dots are much more, the things left out in the ellipses are much more extensive than the things he actually quotes. And they change things. So here we go. Right, so we start off by quoting, right, if you, the larger typeface gets us to, right, gets us to the first ... in Ish HaLacha. Right, so the goal, the essence of learning is not just dveikus, or simple dveikus, or merely dveikus. Kim lehasigal yadah torah v'mitzvos v'dinim, v'leidad kol davar al burio kolel pratea, so we're all in the realm of halacha. Ulehasig gam kein sisrei pil'ei ma'asav v'cheker kevodo. And also to understand the wonders of his works and the analysis of his glory. So for the Rav, kind of left something really important out of that, right? We're always like we kind of went a long way from just halacha, right? If we're including the pilei sisrei pilei sanav v'cheker kvodo, and that he says requires yigia atzuma, right? Enormous effort lasig amitat kavanot haTorah lefi hasagato, v'chol asher yosif lilmod ken yosif lichpots lilmod od. Whatever you learn, you're going to want to learn more. Now this is where we get started getting central, because remember there was not sure this will be missing on the tape, I fear. Hope one of the recording comes out. Here we pick up where Nefesh HaChaim said that there's a chiyuv of Torah lishma that makes you want to learn more, and it makes Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai understand that he has not fulfilled his obligation yet. But this is given much more expansively in Ruach Chaim. So let's watch what he says. He says, "Uveavata Torah." Love of Torah means that you wish you could never eat or sleep. Okay? Right? Love of Torah means, as the Rambam talks about God, right? That you're lovesick for Torah. You don't want to do anything else but learn Torah. Right, you want to spend nothing, right? You want to spend your time doing nothing but learning Torah. Okay. Right, that's a great thing to quote here in Yisrael Sharon. It's above the od or Torah. Kalide or shehisagnu nir'e yoter sheyesh od or unekave lahasigo. Right, but everything in the light of Torah we see inspires us to more. And then he goes on and gives a metaphor, which totally I was utterly shocked when I first saw this metaphor. He says, imagine that you're entering a palace, and you're in a room, and there are these beautiful gems there in the room, and you think they're really great, and then you see a door at the other end, and you say, wow, if this first room I just entered into the palace has all these beautiful gems, imagine how beautiful the gems must be in the next room. As you go into the next room, and every room the gems are a little bit more beautiful, and there's always a door at the other end. So that's what Talmud Torah is. Right? Talmud Torah is you learn Torah, and everything you learn in Torah makes you realize that there's another room, which is closer to the king, and therefore must have more precious jewels. And so you get drawn deeper and deeper into Talmud Torah, and that leaves you to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who has a curriculum that goes well beyond halachot v'agadot. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's curriculum takes you to davar gadol v'davar katan, davar gadol ma'aseh merkava u'ma'aseh breshit, davar katan havayot d'abayi v'rava. Right, and if you think of the curriculum as progressing from davar katan to davar gadol, so it tells you here that the learning of halacha is the first room. And it draws you on until eventually you get to Kabbalah. And you understand, right? And all the other things in Rabbi Zakkai's curriculum. Now, the rest of the curriculum is not structured linearly. It includes things like Mishalot Shualim, right? Which fox fables, Aesop's fables, Mishalot Kovsin, which I think are lower class dialect fables. That's why in my play, right, the Koves talks Cockney. Right, and Cockney has a particular form of fable. So I think, right, so I don't know that this is necessarily the case, but I think that the way that the way that Rechaim Volozhin understands it, right, is that Talmud Torah is a process for which halakha is the entrance Torah. But that love of Torah creates an insatiable desire to know all of Torah. Right, and that's really his definition, right? It's right, to learn Torah for itself means that you are focused on Torah as a whole. And you want to know all of Torah, and that is distinct from love of God. It may merge in the end, right? But the object of your love is Torah in its most expansive sense. And I think we'll tie in with the notion, right? But what's wrong with Tehillim? The answer is that Tehillim isn't learning. Tehillim is recitation, and maybe he's also worried that Tehillim is addictive. It doesn't lead you to anywhere else. Right, you learn Tehillim, you just want to recite Tehillim again. But if you could learn it in a way that when you read Tehillim, you said, "Oh my goodness, I've learned Tehillim, but I haven't yet done Negamim and Olos. How can I live with myself when all I know about Torah is Tehillim, when I also need to know Negamim and Olos?" Right, that would be learning Torah Lishma. But if it turns out you don't love is not the Torah, but the experience that Torah gives you, right? That would not be learning Torah Lishma. We could talk about whether it's Ahava Hatzliya B'Davar, as opposed to Ahava Shena Tzliya B'Davar. That if it's an experience that Torah gives you, so then that's not right. That's not true. That's Ahava Hatzliya B'Davar, as opposed to its experience of learning Torah. Okay, so he goes on to say, right. So you pick it up, right? You say, Kimash Aval Pid V'Reini Yisba'er Kipshuto, Kimat right in the middle of the page. Kimash lomed rak li dvekut. There's that word rak again. Halo dai lefanav yikral midorei god. Then it would only be enough to one masechet. Aval lefimah shekatavti lishmahu liahavat haTorah, or it's ano lahasiga kula. This is the bold print in the middle. V'leidal baria kol prater leval yaniach devar gadol katan v'devar gadol mimena kamar Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. So it's a completely comprehensive knowledge of Torah, both the law and everything else about it. And then he tells you, right, here's the giveaway. Right, so he's very clear that there is another kind of dveikus, and that dveikus is dveikus in love of Torah, as opposed to dveikus directly in love of God. Now he tells you at the end that you have to engage in what we might call like old-fashioned dveikus before you learn Torah. In order to get yourself in the proper frame of mind, that's what Yirato Kodem L'Chachmato means. You should enter learning in a state of dveikus. But having entered learning in a state of dveikus, meaning in a state of religious experience, then right, and he says you should also do vidui, right? You should confess your sins before you learn Torah. But Aval Bishat Esek HaTorah Amar V'Daber Bahem Lishmam L'Shem Esek HaTorah. Okay, and he ends up with Dal Vamosh Halacha Bilvad, but I don't think it can really be halacha except in an incredibly expansive sense. So that's where I want to end up this year. That Reb Chaim Volozhin's definition of Torah Lishma is not, it's cognitive, but it's cognitive in the sense of that where cognition is the desire to know. Learning Torah Lishma is learning in fulfillment of a desire to know Torah completely, in the analogy that Tai gave, right? That you want it, right? It's not, it doesn't relate to God that way. It relates to Torah that way, right? So you're Davek, right? So, Lidavek Be'avata Torah means that you think nothing other than I want to understand Torah as completely as I can, and I can't live with the notion that I'm doing something else while there is a piece of Torah that I don't know. Now, it might be you feel the same thing, there's a piece of Torah that I don't know fully. But the characteristic is the in it right is the insatiable desire to know more. As interesting, you know, it doesn't. This is a form of learning that doesn't valorize Chazara in the slightest. right? Or it's really, right? You know, there's no mitzvah to do this if you already know it. Yes.
You just changed the definition of know. Like you say that it's like you're really knowing something new.
So it could be, right? Right? There could be that you always find something new.
You don't
right?
remember it.
Pardon? You don't remember? Yeah. So an interesting question, but you know, but I would think that this would prioritize the new over the right over the solidification of the old. But it could be we could think about whatever love relationships we have in our life, and then think about right. So this is the kind of right. That's the kind of relationship that you want to have. You know, and different people. Some people are always into novelty and discovering new things about each other, and some people, you know, are just want to know the things they know about each other. Well, I imagine that you know that it would not be difficult to construct models for in which what you do in learning is very parallel to what you do in life, and then you know have fun writing the novels with the characters who think that learning and life should be the same thing, and the characters' relationship with Torah is completely different, and which one creates jealousy on the part of whom, and all those sorts of things. Those who are looking for. For the next wave of novels about yeshiva students, which I'm sure there is an overpowering urge for. Hasn't been like a really good one written in, I don't know, 67, right? Since the yeshiva, is that a really good novel? There's a decent one that came out near Yisrael like 35 years ago that no one knows about, which I can't find again. But there was a really interesting pre-art scroll novel about Neri Yisrael High School. And the Rebbe who comes and it was wholly inspirational and how people relate when the ordinary world is disrupted by a charismatic person who gets everyone really into Torah. Any case, that's right. So that's where we are. That's where we are now. I think it hopefully gets you to reimagine Reb Chaim V'lezhin. Gets you to rethink Yesh HaLacha, and have a conception of Torah Lishma. And next week we'll talk about things that aren't Torah Lishma, and the extent whether there's a single definition of Torah Lishma, and how it relates to, in general, how we consider the principle of Le'olam Yasok Adam B'Torah Mitzvot B'Lishma, Shemitoch Lishma, Shol Lishma B'Lishma. Thank you. All right.